Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones-Gunn.
Hello, this is Cheryl Broderson in studio with my guest, Pam Clark. Sad news, Robin is not with us. She would love to be with us, but some health issues have prohibited her. She's resting so she can get back in the studio as soon as possible. Now, if you listened to part one, and if you didn't, go back and listen to part one. Pam Clark has a fascinating childhood growing up in England, Germany, during some crucial time, the time when the Berlin Wall was being built and established. And it was, it's thrilling. You're going to, not in a good way, you're going to want to go back and listen to it. And then she came back to the United States, and what a culture shock that she had coming back, especially landing by ship in New York, driving across the United States, going then to California. And remember, when Pam is doing this, we're talking about the 60s. So we're talking Black Panthers. We're talking Hell's Angels. We're talking the aftermath of President Kennedy's assassination. These are uncertain. These are scary times. But you did settle in Arizona. But you said, again, another culture shock because you're a blonde-haired, blue-eyed young girl living in a predominantly Hispanic culture. So here's another culture, a culture within a culture.
Yes.
So now you're in high school?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, just beginning.
Okay.
Just eighth grade, ninth grade.
Okay, yeah. Describe that time to us, too. I'm loving this.
Oh, thank you so much. With it coming in there, and I had mentioned that I had kind of an English-German accent. And here, I've lived in Europe. So what I saw happening was that almost like my peers assumed I came from a very wealthy family.
Oh, right.
You know, which wasn't the case. And just standing out, being very different. And there were two Hispanic girls, Cecilia and Rosa, who just started teasing me, humiliating me, embarrassing me. I just was very anxious and intimidated and scared and just didn't know how to handle this. And at this point, you know, I have a sense that there's a God, but it's not something that's really very formed or developed in me. But I'm walking to school one morning and I'm praying.
Wow.
And I'm praying, okay, God. I'm scared. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to respond to this. Please help me. And so when I got to school, you know, like 5-10 minutes later, the more aggressive of the girls walked up to me, shoved a note at me. You remember the kind of notes we'd pass each other, all wadded up?
Yes.
She just shoved it at me and walked away. And I'm thinking, uh-oh.
Yeah.
I'm folding it, unfolding it. And it said, we've decided we're going to be your friend.
Oh, my goodness. Shock. It's like, oh, boy, God answers prayer.
It's exactly. I'm thinking, oh, in 10 minutes? You answered in 10 minutes?
Wow.
I was stunned. I was really stunned. And then what proceeded to happen is that these two girls took me under their wing. They're going to teach me how to be a chola. and they did, you know? And so it was really an introduction again to another culture.
Right. And what an accent you must have developed.
Really.
We're going to add German, American, cholo. Chola.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, just fun and interesting, but also that time of realizing that even before I knew God, he knew me.
Yep.
And he was directing my steps. where I was not at all aware of that. Mm-hmm. And I'll share more about how I began to see that mm-hmm. as I started the mission work that I do in Africa.
Okay. Oh, I can't wait to get to that part.
Yeah.
Okay. So what was the time then? So you go through high school. These two girls become your friend.
Yeah.
Now, when did the moment where you kind of, let's say lights went on, you said, I need Jesus. This has been Jesus. When did that moment happen?
That's a great question. And I would share with you, I kind of continued to be a bit of a seeker.
Okay.
I didn't really understand.
Well, the 60s were a time of seeking, weren't they?
Totally. Mm-hmm. You know, and being aware of hippies. And my father then was sent to Vietnam with the Red Cross when I graduated from high school, along with one of my brothers. He was also in the Red Cross at that point. So, yes, lots of different cultural phenomenon influencing me, but all of us at that time. Mm-hmm. And so I found myself questioning, exploring. One of my sister that has passed away married and became very involved in a Nazarene church. Mm-hmm. And so I visited there with her. I went to a youth camp, like a high school youth mm-hmm. camp. And yet didn't fully mm-hmm. embrace it. Mm-hmm. And I would say that for me, when I was in my 20s, mid to late 20s, there came a time where I was like, I need God. Mm-hmm. I need God. I can think that I'm pretty good at things. I can think that I've got a lot handled in life. But the one thing I realize I'm really good at is messing things up. Mm. And I want God. Mm. And so that was a shift, mm-hmm. a turning point for me. Mm-hmm. And I would say that that journey really continued and deepened through experiences in my life. Mm-hmm. Experiences of failure, mm-hmm. experiences of feeling like, yeah, I'm really good at messing things up.
Yeah.
I can't do this. Mm-hmm. I can think I'm smart, but, mm-hmm. you know. And so when I was in my 40s, mm-hmm. my marriage crumbled. Mm. I had two young children and a stepson, so I had three young boys. And I felt scared, alone, not sure what I can do. Mm-hmm. And really seeking God mm-hmm. in that. I would say that point, it's interesting, isn't it? Almost going from being, you know, 12, 13, 14, to my 20s, to my 40s, mm-hmm. you know, it's like the layers mm-hmm. of God at work.
Mm-hmm. But it was like life really began.
Yeah.
With God.
Yes.
So now how did you like embrace the gospel? How'd you hear it and embrace it?
Yeah. Good. That's an excellent question. I started seeking out a church mm-hmm. in San Marcos, which is the area I live in mm-hmm. in San Diego County, and was hearing things. And it was a church in some ways similar to North Coast Church, mm-hmm. which is the church I've been with now over 30 years. But this church met in a warehouse. It was not at all kind of the familiar sense of a church mm-hmm. that I grew up with or had
right.
an image of.
No formal.
No. Mm-hmm.
Very informal.
And mm-hmm. so that was a little bit of a hurdle, mm-hmm. but I was hearing things that were really touching me. Mm. And I realized that the music really spoke mm-hmm. almost to parts of me that went beyond the words. Mm. And I loved that. Mm-hmm. And I began to speak with and meet with the pastor, and he is the one that really opened up the gospel and kind of giving me a glimpse. Mm-hmm. What is this journey? How do you go on it? Mm. And I would say that in my previous experience and understanding of God, Jesus didn't have a place. Mm. I had a sense there is a God.
Right.
Who's Jesus? I don't know.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And so this pastor talked about Jesus.
I love that.
And he talked about asking Jesus, asking God into our lives and to forgive us of our sins. Mm-hmm. And what I realized is that for me, there was a barrier that also had to do with I had been molested as a child.
Okay, yeah.
And there was something in me that said, I didn't sin. Mm-hmm. It was sin against me. Mm-hmm. And so that somehow made it hard for me mm-hmm. to really embrace that. Mm-hmm. But when this pastor talked with me and shared this, it's like it opened a window that began to allow me to really confront and see, yes, things were sinned against me. I have also sinned. Mm-hmm. And when I could begin to embrace that, mm-hmm. my journey really moved.
Mm. You know, I find it fascinating, too, because of the ministry that you have,
yeah.
which is called Protect Our Daughters.
Yeah.
And considering it was almost like you not only the Lord allowed you to feel mm-hmm. Culture, he allowed you to feel the confinements, the dangers, but he also allowed you to feel the defilement so that you could have compassion.
Absolutely.
And, you know, those things do not make sense.
Yeah.
We're angry, we're resentful.
Yeah.
Until you give them to the Lord and say, use this for your glory. And then you realize that you can speak into lives like no one else can.
Yeah.
And that is absolutely huge.
Yeah.
So you're still at that church, right?
I'm at North Coast Church now.
Okay.
The church with that pastor was a small church that is not functioning now.
Okay.
But I started with North Coast in 94. I started
94.
Going.
Okay. So I am curious how you went on this mission trip to Rwanda.
Yeah.
So let's get right into that. How did you end up on that mission trip? So you're in church. Mm-hmm. You're now discovering the Lord, mm-hmm. you're growing, the barriers have mm-hmm. come down, mm-hmm. and, you know, you're embracing. How did you end up going on a mission trip, of all places, to Rwanda?
Do you mind if I backtrack a little bit?
Oh, I love you too. I want you to. Yes.
Okay.
Oh, no, I love your story. So please, whatever
you
need to do.
Well, because it's relevant to, mm-hmm. to what you're asking. So in that time frame, in the 90s, the mid-90s, I had been working with a movement re-education method. I taught at a university. I had a private practice. But it was all crumbling as I was going through this divorce. I had young children. I just moved to a different area. And I was really seeking God, like, what do you want for me? Do you want me to continue with this line of work or something else? Mm-hmm. And I was going to a play with a group of friends from North Coast Church. Some of them I knew, some I didn't know yet, new people. And so on the way home, I was sitting in the back seat talking with one of the ladies that I didn't know well, and she was kind of telling me her story, and my friend was driving, and she's driving along, and at one point, she pauses, and she turns around for a second, and she looks, and she says, "Why aren't you a counselor?" And I was like, Okay. So within a couple of weeks, I started looking into that. Now, what programs are available? What, you know, is that a door that God wants me to go through? And I heard about a graduate program in Christian counseling that was being hosted at the mission in Oceanside, the Mission San Luis Rey. It was part of a school up here in Orange County. And I went to an open house and I visited it and I was like, okay, looks like it's a 2-year program. And I asked the academic advisor, do they ever offer any kind of financial aid or scholarships? Because I'm in the middle of a divorce. I don't have much of anything and I don't know what I'm going to have. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, not usually. But write to the president of the college and just tell her about yourself and what you think you might have to offer and see what happens. So I did that. And then probably within 2 weeks, I got a phone call in the middle of an afternoon. And, hello, this is Dr. Whipple. I got your letter. You write really well. I have some questions for you. And so we started talking and she wanted to know more about my situation and getting just to know me a little bit. And after this like 15-20 minute conversation, she said, the program starts again in 2 weeks. Show up and we'll work out the details.
Wow.
I hung up and I sobbed. Mm-hmm. And I sobbed for an hour. Mm-hmm. It was like, God, mm-hmm. how? Mm-hmm. You know, how can you? How did you? It was just like God truly telling me, I'm here. I'm here. And yes, I am with you. I am guiding you. And so I did. I showed up and went through that program. And in the midst of it, I had begun to go to North Coast Church. And when I was finishing the first phase of traineeship and getting ready to start where I would intern as a therapist, I approached some of the pastors at North Coast Church because at that point, there was really not a counseling program. There were, my friend had been a lay counselor there, and they had a counselor that they would refer people to that was licensed. And so I approached them and I said, is it a possibility that you would take me on as an intern? So I met with Charlie Bradshaw and Larry Osborne, and yes, they agreed to it. And very quickly after that, they hired the counselor to be my supervisor. You know, she was brought on. And then they started building a counseling center and hired a director of the counseling center. And now it's a counseling center with, I think, more than 20
excellent
licensed mm-hmm. therapists.
And that church has gotten so big. I mean, they used to be down the street. We were at Calvary Chapel Vista.
Yeah.
And my husband is good friends with Larry.
Yeah.
And, you know, both our churches exploded. And we were just so happy for each other.
Yeah.
And so I can see, because I've heard it's exploded even more. So they need those counselors.
Yes.
That is fantastic.
Yeah.
It
was. It was when I started the attendance was about 3,000,
yep.
just over 3,000.
Yep. Yep.
And now it's, I think, 15,000.
Oh, it's huge. I know. They started using buses. Like, this is after we moved to England. This is after that. And we were just like, oh, that is so fantastic what God does.
Yeah. So just getting to be a part of the counseling center and being a part of that developing ministry of the church. One of my friends, the friend who had actually said, why aren't you a counselor? She and her husband, he was leading a short-term mission trip to Rwanda. And they came over one Sunday afternoon. And
I think she's got the gift of prophecy, this friend.
Yes. She's passed away since.
Okay.
But, yes.
Well, now she really does that.
Yes. Yes, she does. So they were telling me about this trip and what they were going to be doing. And one of the things that Al said is that during the genocide, which was in 94, there was really very little international response to this crisis.
That's right.
And so there's a real sense of almost being invisible or unimportant. And that spoke to me, spoke to me as a therapist, as a person. It's like, I want to be there. I want to be able somehow to convey, I see you. I value you.
So good.
And so I asked to be a part of this group and went. It was in the summer of 2006.
How long was it going to be for?
It was less than a two-week trip.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a long distance to go for that.
It was. It was. And we were put together with partners, but then also in little core groups, because different groups went to different parts around Rwanda. And so when we got to the airport in Kigali, Rwanda, one of the people that was going to be on the team that I was on, and he ended up that he was partnered, we were partnered together. He was from Kenya, and he was being brought to the airport to meet our team by Robert and Susan Owade. And in the midst of that, here are the very first moments I'm there at the airport. Robert and Susan and I meet and start talking, and there truly was almost like a instantaneous trust and recognition.
And bond.
It was amazing. And so I went through the mission trip with the team I was with. I was given opportunities to speak to groups. We were out in a field in Shangugu, which is a pretty remote part of Rwanda. And we've driven a couple of hours to get to this little, and it's a big open field. There's sugar cane. There's no shade. Pretty flat, but these people have walked for hours and then waited for us, for some of them for hours, for us to get there.
Wow.
And just sharing the gospel, sharing God's love, and then being asked to speak with this group of women. And so like about 50 women and working with an interpreter. So I'm speaking and the interpreter is following. We're kind of taking turns. And in that moment, as I'm speaking with this group of women and the traumas that they're experiencing, and I asked them, have you ever heard of Berlin? No, you know, I said, when I was a girl, I lived in this, in Germany, and this is what was happening. And so I got to experience firsthand and witness the persecution and the violence and the hatred. And I saw the women in this crowd's response of, and there was one woman who understood and spoke some English. So she was more asking me questions in English and responding. And I saw this sense of how does this white, freckle-faced, you know, red-haired girl, woman
know my pain?
Yeah. How is that?
We're going to have to. This is a great cliffhanger, I am telling you. So that was part two. We're going to come back next week for part three, and we're going to talk more about Rwanda. We're going to talk more about Pam's ministry now that is ongoing in Rwanda.
In Kenya.
In Kenya, sorry. Kenya, right. What she's seen, what is going on with these young women, some of the trauma that they've seen, and the ministry that God has inspired her to start. You don't want to miss next week. Join us.
Thank you for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not-so-well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.